you're expecting a bunch of guru fluff and get-rich-quick garbage, you've come to the wrong place. This show is the No Bullshit Real Deal.
No Bullshit Real Deal.
I'm Larry Harbolt, and they call me The Real Deal. Welcome to my show. This show is aimed at providing you with quality information so you can make more profit in the fastest way possible without making costly mistakes from the deals you do.
Let's get started.
Welcome, everyone. This is Larry Harbolt. You know, I've been talking about my mentors for a long time. You've heard me speak of them. And today is a real treat because I've got one of my friends and mentors who teaches about landlording and property management. And he's probably, I think, the best there is in the business. And that's why I wanted to bring him to you, so you can learn from the best. The man's name is David Tilney. He's fabulous, and you know he wouldn't be part of my people if I didn't believe he was the best there is. So I want to welcome Dave, and I want Dave to inform you on a lot of things that many of you have never heard. So Dave, I want to thank you for being on today, and would you mind telling us what you're going to be speaking about?
Sure, Larry. Thank you very much for inviting me. You know, I'm a landlord, and I've been a landlord since 1978, so that's 40 years. And I think being a landlord is just an incredibly wonderful occupation, and yet I find most people are scared to death of it. I actually think it's the lazy man's way to be in the real estate business. So I kind of want to give you a little bit of two things. One is, for lack of a better name, I'll title it War and Peace. Is this a story about landlords and tenants? And I don't think it's a story about landlords and tenants. I think that landlords and tenants have a very symbiotic relationship. They need each other, and the relationships are not in conflict, or certainly should not be in conflict. And I'd like to bend your thinking a little bit and hopefully have some people decide that, well, you know, it's not what I thought, or you know, not all tenants are liars, and all of those other things that have gone on in landlords' minds for years. And then I also want to share with you why I just feel so blessed to be a landlord. So if I can jump right in, I wrote down 10 things that, actually I think it's 11, that I think tenants want when they rent our places. And I'll just cover them with you and have you see how it jives with what we want as landlords, or what I want, certainly. The first one being that the tenants want to live in a safe environment. And you know, I don't want to be involved in any properties that aren't in a safe environment. Can you imagine wanting to send your spouse to a place that you invest in houses at night? That's not on my list of things I want to do. So clearly there's no conflict there. Tenants also want well-maintained properties. And you know, I want well-maintained properties really for three reasons. Number one, they generate more rent. Number two, they appeal to a much better applicant. And number three, I think you'll find it's much cheaper to maintain properties than run them into the ground and have to resurrect them. I think bottom line is you can't expect your tenants to have pride in your stuff if you don't have pride in your stuff. It's really important to give them something that they can take your house theoretically and make it their home. And if they've just got a place they can lay their head at night and then quote-unquote camp out camp out in the house, that's the wrong approach. You want them to take that house and make it a home, which means it's got to be well-maintained. Does not mean it needs to be a super-duper property, meaning, you know, 4,000 square feet. We had plenty of 800-square-foot houses, which worked great, but everything in them functioned, and everything was tidy and organized. And a matter of fact, in many cases, those 800-square-foot houses were really terrific because the neighborhoods they were in were multi-generational neighborhoods. You had grandparents living in houses there, you had their kids living in houses there, and their grandkids living in houses there. They had a real sense of community rather than some of these new neighborhoods with vaulted ceilings and chrome and glass, and you know, folks move in and move out and they don't ever get the landscaping in. And it's not a price that I'm talking about when I say well-maintained. It more is that things function right and it looks okay. The third item I put down is tenants want to understand the agreement with you, their landlord, regarding their rights and obligations and your rights and obligations. And, you know, landlords, of course, you know, wants the tenant to understand what the tenant can expect from the landlord and what the landlord does expect from the tenant. No conflict there. The issue that I see here, though, is as everything starts getting automated and more things are handled electronically, I find landlords wanting to disperse keys automatically, wanting to have tenants sign applications automatically online, sign leases automatically online, get keys in some automatic function, so the landlord never has to meet the tenant at all in terms of eyeball to eyeball. And I think that's a big mistake. I think that's the most important time to meet the tenant because, you know, you want to hand them something and essentially say, sign here, press hard, last copy's yours, read it later if you want. You got to think, now, what is this session supposed to accomplish? The first is that it really should be a training session. You know, every time you meet with a tenant, a training is taking place. The question is, who's training who? And so you want to share expectations as to what you expect in that time. And you also want to set it up to be the final sieve in your screening process. And screening from a landlord's perspective is probably the most important thing you'll ever do. But if an applicant has gotten all the way through your screening and you think they're the right people, that time together will give you the opportunity to see if what you're trying to accomplish and they're trying to accomplish are in sync or if they're not. And if they're not, you have the ability to stand up, look them in the eye, put out your hand and say, let's shake hands and be friends. What you're trying to accomplish and we're trying to accomplish are two different things. So I really think it's important to have that time to share and go through the rental contract. And you'll find if you do that, that your tenants are very pleased. They're you know, most landlords have never, ever considered spending that kind of time with folks. But from my standpoint, I figure if I spend an hour and a half to 2 hours with folks in the lease-up session, that I've really just bought myself an annuity from then on out. If you got that right, then everything else flows and works out well down the road. The next item is item number four is they want control of their occupancy. And that's a little bit of in conflict because the owners want to control the occupancy. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that tenants don't want to move into your house and immediately have a sign go up on the front yard offering the property for sale, or they don't want to be foreclosed out of the house. They want to be able to feel that they can move into the house, put in the vegetable garden, hang pictures on the wall, and do make it home and whatever that means to them. Now, that doesn't mean that you know, job situations aren't going to change or marital situations aren't going to change and they're not going to have to move on a dime. They are going to have to do that. They're going to move when it's okay for them. But they want to feel like they can put down roots if that's appropriate. The landlord, we generally want long-term occupancy, but we want to be able to terminate an undesirable tenant quickly if we can. So how do you bottom line is both must cooperate to meet each other's costs and or damages. And the best way I know how to illustrate these kinds of things is to give you a real example with tenants. I want to see if I've got it. Yeah, I got an email this last Sunday from a tenant. And the tenant had previously told me that they were in the market to buy a house and they were going to be moving. Well, this last Sunday was just after I'd collected rent the Friday before. And so rent's paid for the month. And I get this email that says, and I'll just quote it to you, a part of it. It says, Janice and I have found a new home that we will close on April 9th. So we are sorry to say that we must pack up, clean up, and get everything to the new place. As for getting the place ready for showing, I think it best to get all the repairs done, and they go on and give me ideas as to what needs to be done. Now, think about this. Here are tenants that did not leave in the middle of the night. They gave me notice up front. they've paid for all of this current month, and here it is the fourth of the month, and yet they're advising me what I should do to the house while they're in it, while they're in transition. For example, before they moved in, we had, you know, our properties are in Colorado Springs, and we had a snow problem where we had an ice buildup in the gutters and water wicked up under the gutter and under the shingles and came down through the kitchen ceiling and did damage to the hardwood floor in the kitchen. So in terms of prioritizing, if I read you the rest of their email, it said, I think we ought to start with fixing the hardwood floor in the kitchen because that will make a mess and we can clean that up before we do a couple of these other things that really should be done to spiff and shine the house. And so very helpful. Then the husband indicated, you know, he changed jobs, oh, I don't know, 6 or 8 months ago because he didn't like the moral code of the employer he worked for. And he indicated to me that where he was currently working, he really felt the folks there were really much like him and his wife, honorable folks and people that we would like to deal with. And he'd indicated that several of them were very interested in the house, and he'd already showed it to them and explained how we did business. And so immediately Monday morning, I guess it was Tuesday morning, I sent him an email with an application attachment as a PDF, and I put some printed applications in the mail to him to start handing out. So I think what I want to communicate is when this tenant told me that they had bought a house, my email back to him, the very first part of the email, I'll read you my response. In bold, I put, "Congratulations, Carl and Janice. Sorry you'll be leaving, but happy for you and your family. I can't wait to hear what you've purchased. Give me a call so we can work out the details. Have a great day." You know, when your tenants are moving, the first thought that goes through your mind is this isn't the best day of your life. You really want tenants to move in, put down roots, stay at least until they die. But everyone has to do what's right for them. And if and when they do move, and they will move, congratulate them. It's a good thing for them. And then you work together to figure out how best to mitigate all of the problems for both parties.
Dave, I'm going to tell you right now, I know exactly what it is to have tenants move out in the middle of the night, do a lot of damage, and even if you try to have a good relationship with them, if you're renting to the wrong tenant, what you're saying is critical, because if you rent to the wrong people, you're going to have nothing but trouble. And I agree, doing it electronically is horrible. You need that FaceTime to decide if that's the people for your unit or not. So I understand exactly what you're saying. I've been through it too many times. So that is excellent information.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's more important than many landlords think. Many landlords don't want to take that time, but it really is important. And what you've just said, Larry, just emphasizes the importance of screening. You know, and I think that anytime you've had a failure with a tenant, you really need to internalize and say, whose fault was it? It was your fault. Something was wrong. You didn't share expectations correctly, or they didn't have the right skill set or the right moral code. And so you really almost need to do an autopsy on your systems and procedures and figure out what you could do better the next time so that that doesn't happen again. Now, you know, we've been very fortunate. We have a tiny little niche business. And my last and only eviction I ever did was in 1981. So, when I did that eviction, I realized I didn't want to go through that again. And so I worked hard to change kind of procedures. As I said before, tenants want to make your house their home. You don't want them to make do or camp out. You want them to put in the vegetable gardens. Those kinds of things it just cements them to the property more. Furthermore, I think that people who live in houses really want more discretion to make decisions about maintaining their house and grounds. They're very different than people who come from an apartment building. People in an apartment building, when something goes wrong in their unit, they want to pick up the phone, call a number, have someone come down the hall in 20 minutes wearing a uniform, carrying a toolbox to fix the problem. The people who live in houses, you know, they really want to, I think Jack Miller used to say they want to be able to walk out their front door, walk all the way around the house and say, get off my property. They're there because they want their privacy. Nine times out of 10, they have a toolbox. And yet what I find landlords doing too often is they sign a contract with tenants and they give them the keys and they essentially say, move into the house, sit in a chair, face the wall, and don't touch anything. And if you do anything wrong, here's how we're going to beat you up. I think that doesn't make sense. What I really want I want a self-directed on-site resident manager. And the beautiful thing about running single-family houses is if you pick the right individual and you share the expectations when you're going through the lease up and get them on board, they will maintain not only the inside of the property, but the outside of the property. And you'll find your operating costs are much less, in my opinion, than, let's say, a multi-unit property.
Well, Dave, let me ask you another question. You said your last eviction was in 1981. Would you mind sharing some of the techniques you've used to avoid? Because I'm sure you're probably one of the best at that that anybody could ever find. So give us some ideas of what you've done.
Number one thing is screening. Number two is you got to have lots of control. And so we advertise all our properties for long-term occupancy, but we put them on a short-term fuse, meaning we agree to hold the rents constant essentially for a year at a time, but all of our contracts are month to month. So if someone, it isn't going according to plan, we can end it quickly. But I would also tell you that, you know, we don't rent to tenants who can intimidate us. And if a problem comes up with a tenant, the first thing we'll do is we will meet with that tenant immediately. And our approach is, you know, tell us what we can do to help you solve your problem. It's not my problem. It's their problem. If something has gone wrong and you'll say, well, you know, if you can't afford to pay the rent, you can't stay here. It's only going to get worse. You know, your credit is not going to get better as we evict you. You're going to have a heck of a time renting the next place. So what needs to be done? Where's mom and dad live? What's your B plan? Do we need a truck here in the morning to load you up? And we will help facilitate our tenants essentially taking their heads out of the sand and taking some kind of action. I can't tell you what the action is up front because each situation is unique. But I will tell you that if you do the screening right, it just doesn't come up. I mean, we don't have one bounced rent a year as a rule. We have super people in our properties that do. Generally speaking, our properties improve over time. Do I bat 1,000? No, I fail too. But when I fail, I realize that the failure is mine. Something was wrong in my system, and I try and make it better for the next time. Continuing on, I said, you know, tenants want an honest landlord, and landlords want an honest tenant. Well, there are issues there because many tenants have quite honestly been burned by landlords before. And landlords, you know, you're in a group of landlords and you ask, well, what do you think about tenants? And the first thing you hear is tenants are liars. Tenants never look as good as day one when they move in. And there's a conflict on both sides. And so how do you gain that trust? And the first thing I'd say is, as a landlord, you've got to underpromise and overperform in everything you do with your tenants, in everything you say or in your contract. Make sure you don't say you'll do something and then not do it. I can remember years ago talking with Jack Miller, and we pointed out between us, we both agreed that if landlords had to post a bond, much like a security deposit, to guarantee that they would do what they should do in their rental contracts, most of them would lose it. Landlords say they'll do things that they don't always do. A question that I many times will ask people is, I'll say, how many of you have been a tenant? Every one of us has been a tenant, pretty much with little exception. So then you say, well, were you a good tenant or a bad tenant? And most people view themselves that they were good tenants. If that's the case, you want to find people like you. You want to find people like you who are honest. If you're not honest, don't get in this business. It's just not going to work. It's going to go downhill. But the key thing is it's going to take time to develop that trust two ways. It's okay as a landlord to be firm, but be fair. Do what you say you're going to do. Under promise, overperform. The next item I put down is tenants want respect from the landlord. They want respect from their neighbors, and they want respect from bureaucrats. And landlords want respect from their tenants and neighbors. But let me start with the bureaucrats and explain what I'm saying there. In recent years, we found a number of municipalities have started licensing rental properties. And it's really a revenue generator for the municipalities, and generally speaking, I think. But many of them have gone from strictly a licensing fee to an annual inspection. So here you've got your tenant made to feel like a third-class citizen because he has someone walk through his house once a year or so and look at the way he lives. And his neighbors on both sides are owners. You as a landlord need to protect your tenant to the best of your ability in keeping these types of things from happening. It's just you want your tenants to feel good about where they live. Now, in terms of neighbors, we had a tenant who lived in one of our houses for 24 years and 10 months. And their biggest fear was that we would let the neighbors know that they didn't own the house because they'd lived there longer than any of their neighbors. Well, there's no reason, of course, that we would ever tell the neighbors we didn't own the house. In this particular case, our tenant was a sheetrocker, and his neighbors across the street were plumbers. For sheetrocking and finishing their neighbor's basement, the neighbors put a sprinkler system in our property's yard. That was an excellent benefit for both of us, for the tenant and for us. And so, you know, you want your tenants to fit in. You want them to be part of the neighborhood. And they want respect, and you've got to treat them with respect. Your tenants want to be appreciated both for their business and their stewardship of the property. And, you know, landlords want appreciation for providing good housing. So there's really not any conflict there. The problem is that 9 times out of 10, the only time landlords contact their tenants is to deal with some kind of a complaint. You know, you haven't paid the rent on time. The yard's not right. Something's wrong. And I think it's very important to praise your tenants when there's something right. You know, we don't spy on our tenants, but if we're out and about and we're within a block of one of our properties, we'll go by. And if the yard looks like $1 million, boy, we don't pass go. We don't collect $200. We stop. We pick up our phone. We call the tenant. We say, you know, I happen to go by your property, and I just want to thank you. Your yard looks like $1 million. That will buy you so much goodwill. It's really important to use positive reinforcement more than you can use negative reinforcement. The last thing I wrote, I put down regarding what tenants are looking for when they're renting my houses, when they're renting from us, is they want a good move-out experience. From a landlord standpoint, I want a good move-out experience too. It saves me a bunch of time. It saves me a bunch of money. My objective really is that our tenants view renting from us as kind of the Ritz-Carlton of rental experiences. I want them to feel good about leasing our properties. And we have had tenants, so many examples. We've had them send us referrals. I gave you indications before of one that is buying a house that's sending me some folks that are interested maybe in renting. But we had tenants that moved out of our houses years ago because it was three generations living together, and the younger generation moved out, and the house, the configuration was wrong. It was too large. And a couple of years later, some of the family came running back and said, "We'll take anything you got because we like your system, and we really like the way it worked." So that's what we find tenants are looking for in renting our houses, and it jives very well with what we're looking for as landlords. Now, I'd like to segue a little bit and share with you why I really do feel so blessed to be a landlord, and why I really think it I just can't imagine doing anything else. I think it's an incredible occupation. And so let me just go through a few things and see if I can change your viewpoint a little bit, because I think too often people think, gee, the one thing I don't want to be is be a landlord and have to deal with tenants and toilets. And that's just not my experience at all. I think the number one thing is that, you know, think about it. As a landlord, you provide for one of the most basic human needs, housing. You ought to feel good about that. There's nothing more basic: food, water, housing. That's it. And it should be very satisfying to know that your real estate investments help people meet this need. You don't have a liquor store that supports your family and you sell alcohol that, you know, may end up getting some people killed or whatever it is. You're doing something that really is very, very needed. And unlike the government that builds all kinds of low-cost housing and every 10 years or 15 years has to tear it all down and start over again, you care about your stuff and you care about your tenants. And so, you know, it really is a very honorable profession. The second thing is that you really do get to work with some wonderful people as a landlord. You're not like McDonald's. You think about McDonald's, they have to serve everyone who walks in their door. And you know, you get to pick who you want to give the keys to your castle to, with the constraints that obviously you've got to meet the federal, state, and local fair housing laws, which aren't a problem at all. You just want to do business with good folks. And so along with that, you know, many folks that I've been doing this for 40 years and people all constantly will tell me about their various real estate assets, be they houses, condos, commercial or whatever else. And I'll say, well, are you sure those are your assets? And they'll say, sure they are. And I'll say, how many people own their real estate? And a whole bunch of folks will say they do. And I'll say, oh, you haven't put it away on layaway, meaning you got debt on it. Oh yeah, they've got mortgages on it. Well, anyway, the bottom line is when I ask them about their assets, I ask them, what's the definition of an asset? And an asset really is something that can pay you, and a liability is something that can eat you. And when you really look at that, and those definitions came from Rich Dad, Poor Dad, the book. But when you look at it, a vacant house does not feed you. It eats you. And it, in my neck of the woods, meaning our houses are in Colorado Springs, boy, in the winter, I can have frozen pipes in 3 or 4 days. I can lose a lawn in the summer in a week because it's high desert. If you don't water, it doesn't grow. Houses are made to have people in them, and your assets are the tenants. And if you view things that way, that will help you a lot. You really want to screen your applicants the same way you'd screen for employees. And what we think we do more than anything else when we lease a property is we think we are hiring someone to do a job. And the job description for us is, number one, we want them to maintain and improve the house and grounds. Number two, we want them to pay the rent on time. But that's a given. If they don't want to do that, they shouldn't rent from us because we're tough. Number three, we want them to get along with the neighbors. And number four, I always look them in the eye and I say, I want you to stay at least until you die and hopefully until your kids die. And we chuckle about that a bit, but really we are definitely in the long-term business. And lastly, I want them to leave us alone to the best of their abilities and maintain the house and grounds themselves. But I also want them to know that I don't screen my calls. I answer on the first ring, and I should be Johnny on the spot if they have a problem in terms of trying to help them solve that problem. Now, an aside on that is that I do feel in most cases I'm like the Maytag repairman in that I rarely get calls. I'm really looking for, in the single family home business, an on-site resident manager, because they will maintain the interior and the exterior of the property. They will minimize my time and expenses. They'll show the properties to applicants before moving. They'll convince, you know, applicants why they should submit applications and why they should do business with us. They'll give us positive and negative feedback regarding people who are looking at the house. Typically, we go from a tenant to a tenant with zero downtime. And that's really important because many times landlords, you know, they have a tenant move out on the last day of a month, and they're very good at doing their make ready. So in 2 or 3 days, they're ready to show it to applicants. But the problem is most applicants want to move in on the first of the month. So it, 9 times out of 10, they've really not lost 2 or 3 days. They've lost a month. And you can't do that. You need to go from a tenant to a tenant for the reasons I already mentioned about losing lawns, frozen pipes, but also during certain economic times, people will find their air conditioning compressors are stolen. The copper wiring will be taken out of the wall. You need folks in your properties, and my tenants do a wonderful job. Third thing I wrote down is tenants will pay for much of your investment while you defer gratification until later. You know, if you just figure out how to tie up the property in a way that the tenants can afford the payments, and then do as my good friend and mentor Peter Fortunato says, breathe oxygen for the next 20 to 30 years, they'll pay the thing off. Don't use your house as an ATM. Don't suck out all the equity all the time. Get overextended. And the next time we have a downturn in real estate, you're wiped out and you lose everything you've got. Fourth item that I wrote is your equity and rent generally increase over time, both because of amortization, you just pay off your debt over time, and inflation. Now, what's really unique about this situation is even if property values temporarily decrease because of amortization, meaning you're killing off your debt, even if the property drops to half, if you pay the debt off, you know, 80% debt on the property all the way down to zero, your equity still increased. Pretty darn good investment, especially when you figure someone else is paying for it. Passive income from rentals give benefits that employees never receive. You have the freedom of time to think about what you want to do with your life, and you have the income to support you and to support others when you're no longer there. Most folks live from paycheck to paycheck. They live lives really of quiet desperation. You have the opportunity of once you establish the income stream because you've deferred gratification, of living a life of significance in whatever that means to you, because you can think about what that should look like and then go after that. Being a landlord gives you a tremendous amount of fun just buying and fixing rentals. You can be the solution to some people's problems. You have the fun practicing your negotiation skills. And I would tell you that at the peak of, you know, when I was an estate builder acquiring more and more properties, I needed another fix periodically because it, you know, it's just so much fun. And you get to have a fix buying properties that will appreciate instead of buying doodads. I think it was John Schaub that once said that he was a spender. He liked to spend money. And by spending it on houses, he couldn't spend it on some other things that would go down in value. I think there's a lot of truth to that for myself also. You need little overhead to be in this business. Think about it for a second. What do you need? You need a computer. You may need some vertical software. You may need some property management software once you get going. You need internet access, and you need a phone. You've got all those things pretty much. Most businesses that you get involved in, you have to buy a franchise for hundreds of thousands of dollars. You start a restaurant, it certainly is costing you hundreds of thousands of dollars. It doesn't cost you here. Now, people may say, well, yeah, but you still got to acquire the properties, and we can't buy in our area. The rents won't make sense, and we don't have a down payment. Well, no, you don't have to buy them. You can rent the properties as a tenant and turn around as long as your lease gives you permission and sublease the property and take a spread. And there are plenty of people that would love to have you do that. Now, think about this for a second. Are there any property management companies in your town? They're everywhere. Well, so that means people have a need for other folks to deal with their properties. The problem with the property, there's any number of problems. But one of them is that they really only offer one size fits all. Whereas you as an entrepreneur can find an owner that has a problem, figure out what the problem is, and offer to solve it. And it can be renting it under very different terms than a one-size-fits-all situation. You can guarantee the rents under some conditions. You can do a performance lease that says you'll pay a percentage of what you receive if and when you receive it. You can pay the utilities between tenants. Each transaction is a separate transaction, and you get to look at what the owner needs, give them what they need, take everything else, and it doesn't take money to do that. The next item I wrote down is everyone knows that, you know, real estate has favorable tax treatment subject to IRS limitations. You know, losses can be claimed against other income. You've got tax deferred exchanges. You've got some new laws that have come out in the most recent, you know, tax changes, Section 199A, 100% bonus depreciation, Section 179. We did not lose 1031 exchanges. It's portfolio income, investing in the stock market, there's no way to shelter that at all. Real estate, there's some major benefits. The next thing I'd say is you're never bored in this business. And you know, I think man was made to work. And if we don't work, we get in trouble. No day is the same. You have different challenges and opportunities. It wards off dementia. And I don't know about, you know, the people on this call, but boy, I know people that have dementia. And the longer I can stave that off, the happier lifestyle I'm going to have. So to have people I can talk to and things that I can do is a benefit to me. The last thing that I really wrote down is that you can never be forced to retire. And I'm 67 years old right now. And, you know, I think that is an incredible benefit. There are a lot of folks in older age that really get cut off from people. They get shut in. They don't have anyone to talk to. And, you know, if I live into my 90s, I can still manage my properties if I want. I can cut it down. I can manage as many or as few as I'd like. But if you really analyze this business and you set up systems and procedures, you don't have the negative parts that people tell you about. You don't have the evictions. You don't have to deal with problem toilets and what have you. You know, we really do enjoy what we do. We collect all of our rents electronically. We take it out of our tenant's bank account. It takes 5 minutes a month. We really have a good experience overall, and just don't know what I'd do if I wasn't doing this. I kind of failed into this business from my standpoint in that I started investing in properties, and we tested three different management companies running our stuff, and none of them had the attention to detail and follow through. So the management is made up of two components. Number one, it is a science. You do need systems and procedures. And it also needs people skills. But I can tell you, if you have great people skills and you don't have the systems and procedures, you will burn out. If you have the systems and procedures, it gives you the time to develop the people skills that will allow you to have a great time with your tenants over time.
Dave, can I ask you a question? What advice would you give to someone that's a new investor who wants to become a landlord to be the very best they can? What would advice would you give them to how to get started and what to look for?
Well, let me follow that up and ask you a question. Are these people that have little capital to start with?
Some have little capital. Some have some. Most people don't.
Okay, well, in terms of getting your first bite out of a piece of real estate, what we told our kids to do, and they're doing it, is I really do believe in master leasing or sandwich leasing. They're pretty much synonymous terms, where you do lease someone's property, you get to tie up their property, take a bite out of it, you build income from day one. But what you really do is it gives you time to gain trust with the owner. And if you underpromise and over perform, at some point in time, that owner is going to be ready to sell, and you'll be the person they'll want to have buy that house. So that takes care of the buying it. Now, the management of it, I'm not sure the exact answer on that. I mean, yes, very self-servingly, I do put on a course to teach people how to do that. You can hire a manager and see, find their misgivings and then push yourself to get involved yourself. I don't think anyone cares about your money more than you do. I think even if you're going to hand it off to a manager long-term, I think you should be involved initially so that you understand what's involved. You know, Dennis Kelch, another good friend of mine, years ago told me that, well, he asked a question. He said, how much do you tip a waiter or waitress when you go to a restaurant? And I said, well, typically you tip them somewhere in the neighborhood of 20%. And he said, well, think about that. So most managers who are running properties are working for less than normal tips because most of them are, I don't know, they're charging somewhere in the neighborhood of 10%. Well, that may be true, but you're charging it on bigger numbers. And if you have the systems in place, trust me, it's a very, very good business. I have a good friend in Dallas, Texas, who sold his business after building it up, and he sold it for $10 million. And so that's pretty good chunk of change that he got for that. Now, what went wrong? He got burned out in the business. He wants to take his money and buy government bonds and clip coupons. He never wants to see another tenant because he dealt with difficult properties, difficult tenants, and it was work. It doesn't have to be that way. When I started, I wanted to own 10% of 200 houses. I thought if I just breathed oxygen the way Peter Fortunato told me, at some point in time, they'd be free and clear, and that would be financial freedom. That's not financial freedom. That's financial servitude. You'd rather have, and everyone has a different number for them, but 10 properties free and clear, 20 properties free and clear, some number that is giving you a bunch of income. And you've got to take this seriously. This is not a hobby. You've got to figure out what your systems are. If I had to tell you two books to read that I think would be very helpful, one would be a book by Simon Sinek. And if you don't like to read, go to YouTube. Simon Sinek did some TED Talks, the title being Why. And he makes a comment that most people can tell you what they do. Some people can tell you how they do what they do, but very few can tell you why they do what they do. It's the why that's important. When you're figuring out your systems and procedures, that is absolutely critical. The other book that I just mentioned is a book by Jim Collins called Good to Great. And Jim Collins' book is about what's the difference between good companies and great companies. And they say that, you know, good companies hire people for a position. Great companies hire the best people they can, put them on the bus knowing they'll drive the bus where it should go, meaning the company. That's the way we view our applicants. We want the best of the best when we're you know, putting them in our houses. And those two books will give you some great ideas, I think, as to how to develop your management systems and procedures. Hope that helps.
Okay, Dave. Well, you know, I can't thank you enough for being on today. And one thing I do want to say to everybody listening, you know, today, what Dave shared with you is just the tip of the iceberg of what he offers in his classes that he does a couple times a year. If you'd like to be able to learn from a true expert, because I'll tell you, David is truly an expert in his field. He can help you become an expert. You need to go to David Tilney, TILNEY.com, which is his website. His email is hfpm@davidtilney.com. And his phone number, 719-492-7462. And I want to tell you, the reason that I have my mentors on my podcast is because I want you to learn from the experts, not the hucksters, not the young people that don't know what they're talking about. These are true practitioners. They've known the business for years. They are true experts. And like with all of my mentors that I present to you, they're not only the best in the business, in my opinion, but all of their trainings are truly affordable for everybody. So, David, yeah, thanks so much for sharing all your years of expertise in the short time we've had today. I truly appreciate having you on.
Oh, thanks for having me, Larry. I enjoyed it.
You bet. All right, well, that's going to wrap up this edition of my podcast for this week. Hope you found that from what David shared with you today has been truly valuable. I invite you to go over to my website, LarryHarbolt.com. Register, if you haven't already, to keep up to date with more ideas and tips to help you become a better real estate investor. Please be sure and tell a friend and leave me a review on the podcast player that you're using to listen to me right now, because your reviews help me know that the information that I'm sharing with you, providing to you, has value. That's very important to me. So I want everyone to have a great week. I will talk to you next week. This is Larry Harbolt.
Thanks for listening to the Real Deal Podcast with Larry Harbolt. To learn more about investing in real estate, head on over to LarryHarbolt.com and register for his educational tips and articles delivered by email.